From KCRW in Santa Monica and PRI, Public Radio International, this is To the Point.
Will firing James Comey backfire on President Trump? Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point. Vice President Mike Pence took the administration's lead today in explaining why the president fired the head of the FBI.
The president made the right decision at the right time.
Trump's action is being compared to the so-called Saturday Night Massacre that led to President Richard Nixon's resignation in 1973. Comey was looking into the Trump campaign's connections to Russia, but the president says Comey was fired because he wasn't doing a good job. His administration insists it's time to move on, but Democrats are demanding an independent investigation. Just one Republican is going that far, but many say they are troubled. That's our topic today. First, here's the news.
Check out KCRW's All News channel, News 24. Programming from KCRW, NPR, BBC, and more. 24 hours a day. Go to kcrw.com/news24 or listen on KCRW's app.
Hello again, Marvin Alney, back with To the Point. With Henry Kissinger sitting next to him in the Oval Office, President Trump today gave a brief answer when asked why he fired the head of the FBI.
Because he wasn't doing a good job, very simply. He was not doing a good job.
Speaking at greater length, Vice President Mike Pence told reporters it was the right thing at the right time.
Let me be very clear that the president's decision to accept the recommendation of the deputy attorney general and the attorney general to remove Director Comey as the head of the FBI was based solely and exclusively on his commitment to the best interest of the American people.
Josh Meyer is senior investigative reporter for Politico. Great to have you back on our program.
Great to be here, Warren.
Henry Kissinger was sitting next to President Trump today. What are the optics involved with that?
Well, that's a very good question. One of many good questions today. We're sort of entering some sort of Alice in Wonderland territory here, I think, Warren, in this. I mean, Kissinger's a throwback. I'm sure they didn't think of the whole Nixon Watergate optics when they did that. There seems to be a White House that's making decisions without regard to at least how the optics look to the American public, certainly to people here in Washington when they make these decisions. Lots of questions about the timing of it, how it happened, why it happened, what happens next, and so forth.
We'll be talking further about the implications and their comparison to what happened during the Nixon administration. But here we have Vice President Pence saying what the president himself said yesterday, that he's doing this at the recommendation of the attorney general the deputy attorney general. What's the significance of that, particularly given that the attorney general had recused himself from anything to do with Russia?
Another very good question. I mean, I think, you know, we're scrambling here in Washington trying to figure out the answers to all of these. In some cases, there may not be. But one of the things that seems to be happening, Warren, is that, you know, the president is creating this dynamic where instead of saying that he is making this decision, he says he's following the advice of his attorney general and his deputy attorney general. So there's something wrong with that on a couple of levels. One, the attorney general is supposed to be recused from anything regarding the Trump-Russia investigations because he was on this transition team and for other reasons. So it raises questions about whether they, you know, dug deep enough to find an example or an excuse to fire Comey over something that had to do with a Clinton investigation instead of the Russia one. So there's a lot of questions about that, but there's also a lot of questions about the deputy attorney general. Rod Rosenstein is a very well-regarded federal prosecutor. He's a career official, and he's still very new to his job as the deputy attorney general. So did this come from the top down or from the bottom up? Did he decide somehow unilaterally that he was going to write this memo and then, you know, the president uses it as cover for firing Comey, or was he directed to do this? And if so, what kind of questions does that raise?
There have been reports today that Comey had asked for additional funding to conduct or continue the investigation of the Russian connection. Apparently he was turned down. But I know that at least one member of the Judiciary Committee, Dianne Feinstein of California, says she never heard about it.
Right. You know, that's one of the things that's flying around there. As you know, in Washington here, it's kind of a wilderness of mirrors, so we don't know exactly what's true or what's partially true. The Justice Department, Sarah Flores, who's Sessions' spokesperson, flatly denied that Comey made that request. But other people are saying that was discussed, that Comey has asked for additional resources, and that the timing of it is suspect. But, you know, the timing of it is also suspect because, you know, Trump was meeting today with the Russian foreign minister. So, you know, why did they do it yesterday? Why did they do it when Comey was out in Los Angeles? Did they do it because he wasn't there to defend himself? I mean, nobody knows.
Can I use the phrase wilderness of mirrors and attribute it to you? Is that okay?
Yes. Yeah. It's a CIA term. It's not mine.
Okay. Well, it's certainly appropriate in this situation. There have also been reports that Trump was considering firing Comey since the day he was elected, but he and others in the administration previously had said nice things about Comey, particularly because he had very closely before the election said that he was reopening the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails.
Right. Well, they praised him for that. And so some of the things that they praised him for earlier on, they are now condemning for and using as a basis for firing him. And so Sarah Huckabee is now actually talking about that as we speak. That's the background noise you hear behind me, is the wall-to-wall TVs here showing the White House press briefing. So, but, you know, I think that they're sort of cobbling together their response to this as they go. I mean, last night for 3 hours after the announcement was made, there were no surrogates for Trump on TV. There were no people that we could get a hold of that were really explaining what was happening. So, you know, it raises a lot of questions about how much of this did they think through. I mean, I talked to one former very senior Justice Department official at length today, and he said, you know, that it takes 6 weeks to get a roll of toilet paper at the Justice Department. So for them to have the Deputy Attorney General, you know, do this memo, get it up to the Attorney General, get it over to the White House, and have it result in Comey being fired in one day, strange credulity or believability. So, we're scratching our heads over here.
It was also reported yesterday that the White House was astounded when this caused so much attention.
Right. Well, and, you know, the White House spokesperson is saying that right now. She said that they were hoping and thought that the Democrats would rejoice at this. But I think that anything is could be that's far from the case. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of questions about the optics, whether they look like they're trying to kill the investigation, even if that's not their intention.
Josh Meyer with Politico. Thanks, as always.
My pleasure, Warren.
Back in a moment with the latest earthquake in Washington on To the Point from PRI. We're not only back with To the Point, as Sarah Huckabee Flores, the spokeswoman for the Trump administration, has said, it's time to move on after the firing of FBI Director James Comey. But Democrats are calling for action. Here's Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
What must happen now is that Mr. Rosenstein appoints a special prosecutor to oversee this investigation.
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he's opposed to any such new investigation.
Today, we'll no doubt hear calls for a new investigation, which could only serve to impede the current work being done to not only discover what the Russians may have done, also to let this body and the national security community develop countermeasures and warfighting doctrine to see that it doesn't occur again.
But Republicans are not speaking with one voice. They are haunted by the comparison to the so-called Saturday Night Massacre that ultimately led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon in 1973. Tim Weiner is a Pulitzer Prize winner and author of Enemies, the History of the FBI. Great to have you on our program.
Hi, Warren.
How similar is this to what happened in 1973?
Well, it's happening at warp speed. That was the fifth year of the Nixon administration, when in his second term, he began first having to fire key aides who were caught up in criminal investigations, and then finally ordered the Watergate special prosecutor fired. He himself could not do that by statute, so he ordered his attorney general to do it. The attorney general declined and was summarily fired. His deputy declined and was summarily fired. And the third in command in the Justice Department, a man you may remember, Robert Bork, finally agreed to do it, and the special prosecutor, Archibald Cox, was dismissed. His files were sealed, and his spokesman was asked at the end of a tumultuous Saturday night, "What are you going to do now, Jim?" And he said, "I think I'm going to go home and read about the Reichstag fire."
We're going to come back to Tim Weiner for more history and more of an update on what's going on now. But first, we have with us Congressman Ted Lieu. He is a Democratic congressman from Los Angeles. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee as well. Good to have you with us, Congressman. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Warren.
What is the situation? It's my understanding that only the deputy attorney general at this point, since the attorney general has recused himself, could call for a special prosecutor.
That is correct. Early last month, I wrote a letter along with two other members of Congress requesting a special prosecutor from then acting deputy attorney general. However, before he could answer, we had Mr. Rosenstein appointed. So we're renewing our call to Mr. Rosenstein. And there is a title, it's Title 28 for the Code of Federal Regulations, that sets forth the criteria for appointing a special prosecutor. And basically, there has to be a conflict of interest, and it has to be in the public's interest. And both these criteria are met in this case.
What's the conflict of interest?
That Attorney General Sessions had recused himself from the Russia investigation. And now with Mr. Rosenstein playing a significant role in the firing of the FBI director who was leading the counterintelligence investigation to Trump and Russia, that poses a conflict for Mr. Rosenstein. And the public's interest is this is a grave constitutional matter that needs to be resolved.
And the conflict with Rosenstein is that he is the supervisor of the FBI. Is that correct?
In addition to that conflict, he also serves the pleasure of President Trump. Nope. And we've seen the president fire not just the FBI director, but Sally Yates, as well as Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney from New York. Basically, anybody who stands up to the president gets fired in the Department of Justice.
Okay, so the president has that authority. Why why should there be a special prosecutor?
Because that's how the American public will know that the investigation is being conducted fairly and impartially. And if you're the White House, you want to have your name cleared if you don't believe you're guilty. So you would actually support an investigation and support the clearing of your name. The last thing you would do if you're innocent is to fire the very person leading that investigation because it shows consciousness of guilt.
Democrats are in the minority. Only one Republican so far, Justin Amash, a Republican, one of your fellow members of Congress from Minnesota, has called for an independent panel. Democrats don't have the votes.
We're getting more and more support. I note that Republican Congressmember Daryl Issa has called for a special prosecutor, and you have a number of Republican senators now publicly saying that they don't understand why Director Comey was fired. And if you look at the reason that the president gives, citing Mr. Rosenstein's memo, they really are ridiculous. They're saying that because Comey treated Hillary Clinton unfairly on two different occasions, he cannot lead the FBI anymore. And I can tell you that's an absurd rationale when the president praised Comey for doing exactly that.
And, of course, the first occasion was in July of last year when he announced that there was, in fact, an investigation of the emails. And the second one was a few days before the election when he said that they were reopening an investigation that they had closed in July. Once again, though, it won't matter if you get a vote, a majority vote in the Congress, because only the deputy attorney general at the moment is allowed to call the special prosecutor.
That is correct. And if the deputy attorney general merely followed the law set forth in Title 28 of the Code of Federal Regulations, then he is going to appoint a special prosecutor because this is the exact case that it's made for.
Okay. Ted Lieu, again, a Democratic congressman from Los Angeles, a member of both the House Judiciary and Foreign Affairs Committees. Great to have you on our program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Warren.
Tim Weiner, back to you. Once again, Enemies, the History of the FBI, your book. How did it get to the point where only the deputy attorney general can call for a special prosecutor?
Well, may I suggest that this is a dead end, given the present situation. the appointment of a special prosecutor,
sure,
or an independent counsel is now so tied up with the politics of the Justice Department. And we have an unprecedented situation here. No president has ever fired an FBI director who was investigating the White House. No president has had the temerity to do that. You have a Justice Department that participated in the firing of the FBI director, including an attorney general who said he had recused himself from all Russian matters. And if the Congress wants to get to the bottom of this, senior Republicans like John McCain, like Richard Burr, who heads the Senate Intelligence Committee, are going to have to draw themselves up and form an independent bipartisan commission such as the one that investigated the Iran-Contra imbroglio 30 years ago, and get to the bottom of this, because the individual committees on intelligence haven't got the firepower, it seems, or the will to do their work.
Again, Tim Weiner says that, says it's a dead end to try to get this done by the Trump Justice Department. One can understand that. Let me introduce Paul Butler. He's a criminal justice law professor at Georgetown University, and he worked with the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. Thank you very much for being on our program.
It's great to be here, Warren.
He, of course, was U.S. Attorney in Maryland before he got his current job. What can you tell us about him, and do you think that it might be that he was caught up in this, that he was asked to come up with a rationale for something that the president wanted to do in order to take the heat off?
I strongly doubt that, Warren. Rod Rosenstein is a well-respected career prosecutor. He served in both Democrat and Republican administrations. He was one of two U.S. attorneys who was appointed by the Republican administration, the George W. Bush administration, who President Obama continued, not just for one term, but for both of President Obama's terms. So I think, you know, the bipartisan support that was reflected in his confirmation to be Deputy Attorney General goes to his reputation for being a straight shooter, for being honest, and for being having a lot of integrity. Now, that doesn't mean that President Trump didn't take advantage of a situation. I'd be very surprised, shocked, if Rosenstein did the president's bidding. But on the other hand, I think that the reason stated in Rosenstein's memo for why Comey had to go were entirely legitimate. Everyone I know who worked at the Department of Justice was outraged by Comey's antics during the Clinton administration, during the Clinton investigation, that is. So it's not surprising that Rosenstein, when he gets in office, would think it's appropriate to advocate for the dismissal of this person who's undermined the credibility of the FBI.
But then you get down to the question of timing. Why would they do it now, given that Comey first made his comments in July? Of course, the Trump administration wasn't in effect at that point. But then we have there was plenty of time between January 20th and now, when they could have done that if they'd really felt that way.
Right. But Rosenstein was only confirmed a couple of weeks ago, so this is relatively early in his tenure. Now, if it's true that Trump has had these concerns all along about Director Comey, I agree with the congressman. They're certainly inconsistent with the approval that Trump has expressed of the email investigation of Clinton. So politically, the timing is weird, but I think there's a credible explanation for it.
So back to Tim Weiner. Obviously, people are caught up in this situation, which you described earlier as a dead end. Elaborate a little bit more on what you meant by what the senior Republicans could do, including John McCain and Senator Burr and others who've indicated their concerns. What would you think they could do, and how long would it take them to do it?
Well, if they had the political will, they could, through their leadership, convene a bipartisan and bicameral independent commission that would be fully empowered to take the investigation where the evidence leads it. I think we're talking a lot about process and not talking about what just happened. What just happened is that the president fired an FBI director who was investigating the White House. And I think there should be cause for concern among the American people that this act in and of itself could someday be construed by a court of law or by Congress as an obstruction of justice and an impeachable offense, because that was the first that was the basis of the first article of impeachment voted against Richard Nixon, that he had obstructed justice in his office as the president.
Okay, there were articles of impeachment drawn up. He, of course, resigned before impeachment took place. Let me go back to Paul Butler. What do you say to that? What if this is an obstruction of justice, and then the man that you have praised so highly would be involved in it, would he not?
The Constitution says that the president can be impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors. I don't think that that includes exercising his legitimate authority to fire the FBI director. So is the timing weird? Yes. Is it suspicious given what we know President Trump has said about Director Comey previously? Yes, it's suspicious. To say that it's an impeachable offense, I think, is an overstatement. Look, if the investigation goes somewhere, if it's done by a credible person and there turns up evidence of collusion between campaign operatives for Trump and the Russians, that would certainly be impeachable offenses, given if President Trump has exposure. But at this point, when we're talking about him exercising the power that the American people elected him to exercise, the FBI director serves at his pleasure. Again, I don't think it looks great that he's fired while he's doing an investigation, but he certainly has that power.
So, Tim Weiner, back to you. How did an obstruction of justice become considered an impeachable offense if it's restricted to high crimes and misdemeanors, or is that one?
It is a high crime because it is a violation of the president's oath of office to faithfully uphold the Constitution and the laws of the United States. And I am saying that what the president did could someday be construed as an obstruction of justice. This investigation is a very serious matter. It is perhaps the most politically charged counterintelligence investigation the FBI has undertaken since the Soviets stole the secrets of the atomic bomb. We are talking about an attack by a foreign power on the American electoral process. And that is a fact. That happened. Russia did that to us. The question that the FBI is looking at is whether any Americans aided and abetted that attack. I cannot think of a more grave matter short of war. And John McCain has called this an act of war. And it's not just the optics, as they say in Washington, that looks bad. It just is bad decision that reeks to high heaven.
Okay. Again, Tim Weiner is author of many books, including Enemies, the History of the FBI. Thanks for joining us for this part of our program. We'll continue this conversation as we go forward today on To the Point. Warren Allnebeck with To the Point. Was the firing of James Comey, the head of the FBI, potentially an impeachable offense by President Trump, or was it simply an exercise of his right to do what he wanted to as president of the United States? The argument that's being used is that Comey had exceeded his authority and acted improperly when he revealed the investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails, first of all in July and then having said that that investigation was closed, when he said just before the election that he was reopening the case because new information had come along. Last week, he told Congress that in these words, what he was thinking when he decided to make that second revelation.
And so I stared at Speak and Conceal. Speak would be really bad. There's an election in 11 days. Lordy, that would be really bad. Concealing, in my view, would be catastrophic.
Again, the former head of the FBI, James Comey. Ken Klukowski is general counsel of the American Civil Rights Union. Good to have you with us. Thanks for joining our program.
Thanks for having me, Warren.
What about this issue of Speak and Conceal? And why is it, do you think, that at this stage, so long after the fact, President Trump thought it was appropriate to fire the head of the FBI?
Well, I think the timing is exactly what you would expect. And I have to say, I was astounded by what I regarded as the hyperbole in the last segment regarding impeachable and obstruction of justice, which, by the way, obstruction of justice is a felony. So when you're accusing the president of obstruction of justice, you are trying to lay the predicate there.
No, he said it was a high crime.
Yes, you are trying to lay the predicate there for impeachment and removal. The reality is this. As the deputy attorney general explained in his memorandum, the view of former attorney generals, attorneys general and deputy attorneys general from both parties under both Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and George W. Bush have weighed in over the past 6 months saying that Director Comey's actions were indefensible and were in violation of longstanding principles and practice at the Justice Department. He quoted Larry Thompson and Michael Mukasey from the Bush administration, but also Jamie Gorelick from the Clinton administration and Eric Holder, the Democratic Attorney General under Bill Clinton, who I don't think anyone is accusing of being a conservative Republican partisan. So to try to revise history only 24 hours after the fact and have a bipartisan consensus among Republicans and Democrats who have been AG or deputy AG over the past 20 years regarding that they thought that what the director did was absolutely unacceptable, to now say that the president acting upon this bipartisan consensus view, that that is somehow an impeachable offense. I mean, this is laughable. Beyond that, I will also say the special prosecutor statute is not at all implicated by this. The deputy attorney general is still in charge of the investigation, and there is an order of succession at the FBI. So with Director Comey out, the deputy FBI director, who, if anything, is accused by some opponents himself of being too close to the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party, that now the deputy FBI director is in full charge of all the investigative powers of the Bureau. So to say that somehow the current confirmed deputy AG, who acted upon this promptly after having been sworn into office, remember, he's only been there a couple weeks, so I think the timing here is exactly what you would expect if Attorney General Sessions says, I shouldn't weigh in on this, I'm recused on this, my deputy is being confirmed. Once he is confirmed, he will examine this matter. And once Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein was confirmed, he took a couple weeks, all the time you would need for due diligence and deliberate, careful consideration of this, and upon that, made the recommendation, which in his memo he noted, is in keeping with former Republican and Democrat AG and Deputy AGs, as we just discussed, making the same recommendation to the president.
Okay, the Attorney General, Mr. Sessions, might not have recused himself with regard to Hillary Clinton. He certainly did recuse himself with regard to investigation of the connection between the between the Trump administration and the Russians. Mr. Comey was conducting that investigation. The Attorney General was cited by the president as a source for firing Comey. Isn't that, as we heard from Ted Lieu, our Democratic congressman from Los Angeles, a conflict?
Absolutely not, Warren, because the Attorney General here, if you look at the documents that have been released, it was a memo from the deputy AG to the AG, where the deputy AG said, the director's actions are utterly unacceptable. And then the attorney general sent his own one-page letter along with that full memorandum to the president. And the president, looking at both documents, and all the reasons for it were set forth in the deputy AG's memo, not the attorney general. The AG having provided everything from DOJ to the White House, the president decided to act upon their recommendations. And there is certainly no conflict by any stretch of the imagination regarding the deputy attorney general here, especially since, as I said, the effect of this is removing a Republican-appointed Justice Department official, Mr. Comey, who, of course, was deputy AG under a Republican president. You are removing a Republican head of the FBI and transferring all of his powers to a Democrat-affiliated director of the FBI. So I don't see how that does anything except leave the National Democratic Party thinking that they're now in a stronger position.
Again, Ken Klukowski is general counsel of the American Civil Rights Union. That's a conservative alternative, I think, to the ACLU. So you said that everybody in both parties, or that there was bipartisan opposition to FBI Director Comey's actions with regard to Hillary Clinton. But here is what now Attorney General Jeff Sessions had to say last November before the election while he was still a Republican senator from Alabama.
FBI Director Comey did the right thing. When he found new evidence, he had no choice but to report to the American Congress, where he had under oath testified the investigation was over. He had to correct that and say this investigation is ongoing now.
Max Boot is Senior Fellow for National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's been an advisor to Mitt Romney and Marco Rubio. Before I go back to Mr. Klukowski and ask him to respond to that, what do you think about this situation?
Well, I think your other guest is so credulous in accepting Trump's explanation for what happened that I'd like to sell him a bridge before this show is over. I mean, it would really take somebody of very little discernment and great credulity to imagine that the rationale put out by President Trump for firing Director Comey is the reason why he actually acted. If you actually believe and take on its face the letter from the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, that was released by the White House and that was cited by Trump as the reason for getting rid of Comey, if you actually take that at face value, the reason why Trump fired Comey is because he thought that Comey was too aggressive in belittling, quote-unquote, crooked Hillary last year, and what he did was inappropriate. In fact, the very conduct for which Trump had thanked him and congratulated him and praised him for repeatedly, I mean, that's ridiculous. That's not what happened. You know, you can make the case that Comey deserved to be fired for his inappropriate public comments belittling Hillary Clinton, but that's not why Trump got rid of him. It's pretty clear why Trump got rid of him. We're seeing the reporting all over the place today in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Politico, and elsewhere, where it's pretty clear that Trump has been raging at Comey because Comey insists on investigating Kremlingate, the allegations of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. He will not also... Comey refused also to serve Trump by verifying his false allegations that Trump had been wiretapped by President Obama. And so the more that Comey has been investigating, the more that aggrieved that Trump has become. And now we learn that just in the last few days, Director Comey had asked for a major increase in resources from the Justice Department to ramp up the investigation of Kremlingate, which he had publicly confirmed. So you can see why President Trump acted as he did, because it's pretty obvious that he's very afraid of what Director Comey may find out. And frankly, if this is in fact what happened, if Trump fired Director Comey because he thought that Director Comey was being too aggressive in investigating him, that is obstruction of justice. That is going to form one of the articles of impeachment of President Trump if and when Democrats retake control of Congress. This is outrageous that this is happening, and I am heartbroken as a lifelong Republican that so many Republicans seem to be buying what President Trump is selling, including obstruction of justice, including destroying our rule of law, including shredding our constitutional protections and destroying the integrity of the FBI and the legal system. These are not things that Republicans should be going along with. These are certainly not things that they would have gone along with if it had happened under President Clinton. And so I am just ashamed of what the Republican Party has turned into as an enabler of this kind of high-level misconduct perpetrated by the president and his henchmen.
referring to Kremlingate, as you call it, in the letter that the president sent to Mr. Comey, which Mr. Comey found out about by watching TV, he was in Los Angeles at the time, even though the letter was personally delivered to the Justice Department, the president said, "Thank you very much for telling me that I was not, in fact, a target of the investigation into the connections to the Russians." What do you make of that?
It's a very mysterious claim that was clearly inserted in there by President Trump himself. Whether Director Comey actually did that or not, nobody knows. If he did, it would be improper. It would violate the guidelines on separation between the FBI and the White House, especially in such a politically sensitive investigation. Personally, I'm skeptical. I doubt very much that Comey actually did that because he does not want any perception that the FBI has been suborned by the White House. I mean, he's got an outsized sense of honor, perhaps to a fault, and I don't think that he would have said those kinds of things to Trump, especially when in public. He refused to say that Trump was not a target of the investigation, but we will find out. I mean, one of the things that should happen now is that Director Comey should be called to testify, and in fact, the Senate Intelligence Committee has asked him to testify next week, and I hope that he does that, and I hope he tells as much as he possibly can about what is going on, and if he does that, Trump may yet be sorry that he fired him, because this is a guy who knows where an awful lot of skeletons are buried.
Let me go back to Ken Klukowski. We've heard once again what you called hyperbole, that this is potentially a impeachable situation. What do you make of the fact that not only the Attorney General, Mr. Sessions, as we just heard before he became Attorney General, was highly favorably inclined toward the FBI director, but so was President Trump?
Well, in fact, as a federal appellate litigator myself, it was interesting to me that my friend on this panel directed his criticism to me instead of to the Democratic Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General from two previous administrations who criticized Director Comey's actions and were quoted verbatim in the current deputy AG's memo, where there was a consensus view, Republicans and Democrats, both Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General, condemning the director's actions and saying that they were utterly unacceptable. And as one deputy AG put it, said he was not sure how the Bureau could recover from a breach of this magnitude.
Okay, so Max Boot, what we're hearing is that Mr. Comey should have been fired a long time ago.
I mean, this is such a ridiculous argument. It's perfectly possible to believe that what Comey did was irresponsible last year and he should have been fired for it. But the time to fire him would have been at the time of the transition. Trump did not fire him then. And there's nobody in the world other than your guest, who seems to be a spokesman for the Trump White House. There is nobody in the world who actually believes that Trump was outraged by Comey's actions last year. He was applauding Comey's actions last year because they helped Trump to win the election. That has nothing to do with the reason why Comey is being fired now. And your guest keeps citing that ridiculous letter that Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein wrote and that the White House released. In fact, one of the people who cited that letter, the former Deputy Attorney General from the Bush administration, has said that the firing was a sham. And I'm sure that many of the people who are criticized in there, who are quoted in there, certainly criticized Director Comey, and properly so, as did I. But that doesn't mean that they thought that he should have been fired like this at a time when he was directing the investigation into the links between Trump and the Kremlin. This is clearly a bogus justification for these actions. And it's up to Congress, and it's up to the appointment of a special, we needed the appointment of a special counsel to get to the bottom of this. And frankly, if the reporting, as I mentioned, that is coming out today about the true reasons why Trump fired Comey, if that reporting is accurate, this is an impeachable offense.
All right. Very different views, obviously. Let me go back to Paul Butler, a criminal justice law professor at Georgetown, who also worked with the deputy attorney general, Rod Rosenstein. We've heard Max Boot now say he thinks that letter that Mr. Rosenstein wrote was ridiculous. Where do you come down on the idea that the president, if in fact what Max Boot says is accurate, has potentially committed, or perhaps I think he's outright accusing him of an impeachable offense?
Well, it's an extremely inefficient way to
obstruct justice because he has not derailed the investigation. You know, one of the points that Rosenstein made in his critique of Comey was that Comey didn't follow the chain of command. At the end of the day, the Attorney General, the Justice Department head prosecutor, is the boss of the director of the FBI. And when Comey did that hearing and press conference back in July, he said he didn't care what the U.S. what the Attorney General thought. He didn't think that charges should be brought against Clinton. Whether that was right or wrong, that wasn't his job. His job was to investigate. Similarly, now the Department of Justice, Rod Rosenstein, is in charge of the investigation of Russiagate. So he still calls the shots, and he will still make the decision about whether anyone will be charged with a crime.
Max Boot, do you justify what Mr. Comey did in July and then again 11 days before the election? Hillary Clinton says that's what defeated her.
To repeat once again, no, I don't justify what Comey did last year. But let's keep in mind that the things that Comey did last year were things that Donald Trump celebrated him for. Those are things that helped Trump to win the presidency. I mean, you have to be pretty naive to imagine that Trump is now firing Comey for helping him to win the presidency against quote-unquote crooked Hillary. That is not what happened here.
Do you think that the president will appoint an FBI director who won't be subject to conflicts and in whom the American public can have confidence?
I have very little confidence that Trump will appoint anybody in whom the American people can have confidence. And frankly, Rod Rosenstein, who came in here with a good reputation as a bipartisan independent prosecutor and who is the deputy attorney general, has sullied his reputation. I can have no confidence whatsoever that he will be an impartial arbiter of the Kremlingate probe, given the way that he has acted to help Trump, provide Trump an excuse to get rid of Director Comey. Sessions has already recused himself, but there are major questions as to why he was involved in the firing of Director Comey, which suggests that he's not actually recusing himself. And, you know, I have very little confidence in Congress either, where the Republicans have consistently showed that they are more loyal to Trump than they are to the rule of law. I think the only way we can get to the bottom of this is, A, with the appointment of an independent, bipartisan 9/11-style commission, and, B, with the appointment of a special counsel who have a degree of independence from the Justice Department to get to the bottom of all this. Trump is clearly upset and frustrated by all of the revelations about his ties to the Kremlin. He wants to stop the investigation. And, you know, your other guest suggested, oh, this is a very inefficient way to do it. Well, we'll see if it is or not. You know, you could say the same thing about Richard Nixon, that trying to fire Archibald Cox backfired on him and turned out to be a very inefficient way to try to stop the Watergate investigation. But that was only because there were Democratic majorities in both houses, and there were enough Republicans of stature, people like Howard Baker and Barry Goldwater and others, who would not at the end go along with Nixon's lies. And I think it's a question now as to whether Congress will go along with Trump's lies and Trump's actions. And sadly, the early indications are that most Republicans will do so.
Okay. The president himself has tweeted today, conducted a tweet storm, if you will, against some of those who have called for special prosecutors, very particularly the Democratic senator from Connecticut, Richard Blumenthal. He has said that Richie, as he calls him, devised one of the greatest military frauds in U.S. history. For years as a politician in Connecticut, Blumenthal would talk of his great bravery and conquests in Vietnam, except he was never there. When he was caught, he cried like a baby and begged for forgiveness. And now he is judge and jury. He should be the one investigated for his act. Let me go back to Ken Klukowski. What do you make of that tweet from the president of the United States?
Well, it's the president has his Twitter account. It was certainly an avenue for communicating directly to the American people during the 2016 campaign on a level that I don't think any political strategist on either side of the aisle ever saw being the case. But focusing on that for purposes of this discussion is nothing but a distraction, because the issue here is not a Twitter feed. It's official governmental actions.
Well, but isn't the president trying to distract when he tweets about the military record or lack of it of one of the senators who's calling for an investigation?
I think that right now you're having some Democratic leaders who are seizing upon what they think is an opportunity. By the way, many of them who called for Jim Comey to be fired last year, and now that the president has fired him, now they're screaming bloody murder because the president did what many of them were saying last year he should have done to begin with. So as they have now politicized this, it's no surprise that when a Democratic politician seizes a political moment, that you're getting another Republican elected politician responding on a political level. But I'm trying to keep this on the policy level rather than the politics back and forth of Twitter feeds.
Okay. I'm sorry to say I'm going to have to interrupt you because that is all the time that we have. Again, Ken Kukoski is general counsel of the American Civil Rights Union, conservative alternative to the ACLU. Max Boot is with a Council of Foreign Relations, was a former foreign policy advisor to Mitt Romney and Marco Rubio. Paul Butler is at Georgetown University. He worked with the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, who, in fact, was the person who actually recommended the firing, along with the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, of the head of the FBI. Once again, the head of the FBI, or the former head of the FBI, has been invited to testify before a Senate committee next Tuesday. We may have to wait until then for the next developments, but don't be too sure. This is To the Point from PRI. In a moment, we're going to be talking about a disastrous accident at one of the most dangerous nuclear waste sites in the United States or the Western Hemisphere. Back in a moment with To the Point from PRI. Warren Ana here with today's talking point. The Hanford nuclear site in eastern Washington built the atomic bomb that destroyed Nagasaki, Japan, in 1945. It provided plutonium for nuclear weapons for the next 40 years, and now it's the most radioactive location in the Western Hemisphere. Yesterday, a 20-foot section of tunnel full of nuclear waste collapsed. So far, no reports of radioactive releases. Dan Hirsch is director of the Environmental and Nuclear Policy Program at UC Santa Cruz. He's also president of the nuclear watchdog group Bridge the Gap in Los Angeles. Dan Hirsch, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, Warren.
Tell us about this tunnel. What's in there?
There are railroad cars filled with extraordinarily radioactive material from the Purex facility. Purex sounds pure or maybe like some kind of household bleach, but it's very, very dangerous facility, standing for the plutonium-uranium extraction facility. This is where immensely radioactive fuel was cut up remotely, dissolved in acid, and had the plutonium removed to make the bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki.
What's the stuff doing in railroad cars?
They had no way of disposing of the waste, so they just dumped it onto railroad cars, put it into tunnels, covered the tunnels up, and did this as a temporary measure until they could somehow figure out what to do with the waste. And so we're talking half a century later, they still don't know what to do, and now one of the tunnels has collapsed.
There is no site for nuclear waste, as had been promised at the outset of the nuclear age. How deeply buried are these rail cars? How delicate does it appear that that tunnel is after 50 years? Is this likely to be very difficult to repair?
It's a significant problem. So they're not very deep. There are a few tens of feet of soil above them. They are kept made out of concrete and Douglas fir wood. And the concrete and the wood have been degrading over time, in part because of the high radiation field that they're in. Community groups have been urging that something be done to shore up these tunnels. And the Department of Energy said there was no need, that they would certainly be able to survive 30 more years. And, of course, yesterday that was proven wrong.
Physicists and one Nobel Prize-winning physicist have been the directors of the Department of Energy, which is in charge of this. Who's the director now?
Former Texas Governor Rick Perry, a man who famously wanted to abolish the department he now heads but couldn't remember its name. So you have a situation where we used to have Nobel Prize-winning physicists running the department, and now we have a political figure with absolutely no experience in nuclear waste. And that's very troubling, not simply for Hanford, but for the country as a whole.
What about the situation there now at Hanford? They apparently locked everybody down when the accident first occurred. They say no radiation has emerged, and they let everybody go home. But now, obviously, a lot of workers are trying to fix this situation. How dangerous is it to the community around?
If there were a significant release, there could be a great deal of danger for not just the community around, but for much of Washington State and Oregon. The tunnels themselves are very problematic. This is highly radioactive material, but it's indicative of a much larger problem at Hanford, which is that much of the high-level waste in liquid form, acid, is kept in about 177 tanks initially, most of those tanks being single wall, and they were designed for only 20 years. And that stuff is so immensely radioactive that it can explode and release a cloud of radioactivity that could devastate much of the state, and something like that happened in the Urals in the former Soviet Union. So these wastes are producing hydrogen gas that can explode, and the government is decades behind in trying to fix that problem. So the tunnels are a big problem, but they're more a canary in the mine type of warning to us about the larger problem with Hanford and, frankly, the larger problem of high-level waste around the country.
All right. And, of course, Hanford is very close to the Columbia River. There's been concern that there would be leakage from those tanks and that it could contaminate the water of one of the major rivers in the United States. Dan Hirsch at UC Santa Cruz and Bridge the Gap, many thanks to you.
Thank you.
I'm Orman Alney. To the Point is a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.